You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 317 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is Tuesday evening, October 19th, and it was a bit of a heartbreaker, or more than a bit of a heartbreaker, for the Atlanta Braves this evening, falling in devastating fashion, we could say, to the Dodgers in Game 3. On the bright side, they still lead the series 2-1, but this is a moment that I think we all have kind of a similar reaction of letting one get away, and I am joined by Eric Cole. Hello, sir. How are you?
Life is pain, Bradley. Life is pain.
Life is pain. I joked with you, and not even joked, I guess, I mean, kind of joked in a way that I would before we started recording, that I allowed myself to believe for about an hour this evening. And in that hour, things went the very, very wrong way. We'll get into it, of course, later in the show, but the Braves famously led by 3 runs with 6 outs to get in this game and then allowed 4 runs in the 8th. Headlines by Cody Bellinger home run off Luke Jackson on a pitch that was not anywhere close to the strike zone. And the end result, of course, is the loss, but it's also a bit of history and not the greatest history. It was actually the first time in Dodgers playoff history, and the Dodgers have been around for a long time. They played a lot of playoff games. First time they've ever actually come back from a 3-plus run deficit after 7 in a game. So that kind of tells you how unlikely it was. Obviously, the Dodgers are good, so it's not like a huge surprise when they do things that are impressive. But whenever you're leading by 3 runs with 6 outs to go, you're supposed to win, and they didn't win.
Yeah, definitely a frustrating loss too, just because Luke Jackson gets beat around in the 8th inning, and just it felt like he just wasn't pitching that poorly. I mean, I think that the Dodgers have certainly had a scouting report that they kind of understood what he was going to be trying to do, but one of the singles was on a ball that was low and away that just got through as a ground ball. And then the Bellinger home run was just I don't even understand how he hit the ball out. I still don't. I mean, I know that he's a big, tall guy. So if anyone's going to have a chance to hit that ball out like that, then I suppose it's him. But I mean, he had to tomahawk that ball out, and it wasn't a cheapie. He really hit the ball hard. And the Braves, they did everything that they had to do in this game, I think, to win it. They got Buehler out early. I'm sure we're going to be revisiting that little subject later on in the podcast. But, this is a tough one, but it's worth noting that the Braves have already hung a couple tough ones on the Dodgers, too, in this series. So, at the end of the day, I was never super comfortable in this game or really in any game in this series because I have a lot of respect for what that Dodgers lineup can do. And so, at the end of the day, the Braves are still leading. That's good. They still got a couple games already in their pocket, but certainly could have been a much better feeling tonight than it was, to be sure.
Yep, and we'll as we always do, we'll dive into what transpired. We'll go pretty quickly. Always not quite as fun to talk about losses, and we do like to have fun on the show whenever possible. But we'll get through this one as we would. And again, this is kind of a brutal loss in every way. I think we're all a little bit shell shocked after this one, but now is the time to get to business real quickly and go through this game. So, honestly, there were 2 big swings in this game. The second one went against the Braves. I guess maybe 3 big swings. The first one went against the Braves. The second one went in favor of the Braves. And the third one went against the Braves. But coming out of the gate here, the Braves could have scored in the first inning. They actually led the game off with 2 singles from Rosario and Freddie Freeman. The freakout over Freddie's 0-for-8 spell was kind of hilarious to me, actually, in the last couple of days. I wasn't prepared for that, but we talked about Freddie a little bit on the podcast 2 days ago, but it became this massive storyline about how bad Freddie was struggling. Guys, it's 8 plate appearances. But he singles, and Ozzie Albies hits a line drive to center field that had a 650 expected batting average. Rosario had a base running mistake, and Eric, stop me if you've heard this before, but the Braves have not been very good on the base paths in this series. Rosario gets called off second base for a double play. Riley strikes out, and the Braves give away a chance to at least get one or two in the top of the first, and that became more magnified when Charlie Morton was not his best at the outset of this game, gave up a two-run home run to Corey Seager about 3 minutes after the game started. So Braves give up an opportunity which they could have scored in the top of the first, and suddenly they're down 2-0, and with Charlie Morton very much wobbling and honestly probably fortunate to get through the first inning without either having to leave the game because he was so bad or also just because of more runs. So I say all that. I know I said a lot there, but it went from positive to negative and then like almost like kind of neutral because I felt like they should have been down by more than two runs at the end of the first, and that kind of not blowing up too bad gave them more of a chance.
Yeah, I honestly thought that Charlie Morton was going to be lucky to get through three innings in this game. I think it's probably to the Braves' benefit to stop giving up two-run homers to Corey Seager in the first inning of games. That probably seems like a good start to any game plan that they might be trying to, you know, draw up in the aftermath of this game. But, you know, one thing I did notice, and it was very similar to the Scherzer start, is just like Bueller definitely didn't look like vintage Bueller. He didn't look like a guy who's a super sharp. Obviously, the Braves get a little bit unlucky with some, you know, BABIP stuff and, you know, running into some more outs, which is obviously less than ideal. You know, when you're going to be super aggressive on the base paths, it kind of opens you up to make dumb mistakes. And in Rosario's case, he got caught off to, you know, make that into a line-out double play, which obviously stunk. But you know, the biggest thing is just these first innings, like the Braves, like, you know, Ian was not good in the first inning, you know, either. And they have to kind of be able to kind of settle into these games without being in a hole early. Unfortunately, Morton was really, really just not good. He hung a curveball basically in like where if Corey Seager said, I want to make a pitch to hit out as far as humanly possible, he would say hang a curveball right where Charlie Morton threw it. And that's what happened. And it's so, you know, sometimes you're going to, Mookie's just going to get on base. Sometimes, you know, he's the guy that you have to respect a bit. But, you know, the Corey Seager thing is just like, that was just a really bad pitch in a bad location. And it got hit a mile, which is what's supposed to happen. And then all of a sudden, like, then it turned into a whole ordeal. Like, the bases were loaded when the inning ended. He was over 30 pitches in the first inning, and I was just thinking this could be a pretty brutal night. And it was a brutal night, but not for the reasons that I thought in the first inning.
Yeah, I mean, Morton just was very bad. And, normally, you know, I trust Charlie. He's very good overall, and he did settle in, to his credit. But it was really wavering to the point where, you know, one more base runner probably, he's coming out in the first inning, and that would have been a disaster on a number of levels. But he got through it. By the way, he tied his season high for walks in a game with 4 in the first inning, and he did so before recording the third out. So he had 2 outs and 4 walks at one point, which is unthinkable for Charlie Morton. But you know, Bueller didn't have his best stuff, as you said, and we'll get to him in a moment. You know, they navigate they're down 0-2, but it's not a disaster. They keep that at 2-2 until the fourth inning, and then in the top of the fourth, the Braves have their own fireworks. Freddie leads it off with a single. Austin Riley has a one-out double, and I use the word double loosely.
Thank you, Gavin Lux.
I about to say a very big hat tip to Gavin Lux for opening the can of worms in the fourth inning. I guess maybe it was technically supposed to be ruled a double. I don't know how the rule book looks on that and how the official score was looking at that one, but I'm sure everybody saw this. But Gavin Lux makes a mess of it in center field. Certainly should have made the play. Had it carry him off his glove, and that allowed the Braves to not only avoid an out, but also get runners in second and third with one out. And then Jock Peterson benefits, and let's actually spend some time on this now. The home plate umpiring in this game was not the best.
Truly for either side.
Yeah, like, I was going to say,
it started off pretty Dodger heavy. Right, because there was just like some pitches that Braves were getting like striking out on, and then like Morton was just not getting calls. Like there's some top of the zone type calls early in the game where you're like, they're strikes. There's not, I wouldn't even necessarily call them borderline, right? And he just wasn't getting those calls. But then, you know, to Jock, he probably should have struck out at a bat. So it started evening out. So, you know, if you're looking at the ump scorecard for tomorrow, you know, I think the runs may end up kind of evening out in terms of, like, you know, win probability added, but
we'll see.
the strike zone accuracy, I imagine, is
it
not
can't
going
be good.
Here,
I mean, there were so many, obviously, you know, game day and MLB.com, it's not always like absolutely perfect in real time, but there were so many misses being captured, and it was just not a good performance there. On this one, the reason why I brought it up just now is because the Braves did benefit from that one, because Jock very clearly should have struck out looking on a third strike. He bounced back from that, though. RBI single by Peterson to cut it up 2-1, and then Duvall singles to tie it at 2. And then Darnold walks to load the bases. So you go from down 2-0 to bases loaded in a tie game. And then Dansby Swanson singles off Corey Seager's glove. Ball hit hard for sure. But
yeah, Seager hasn't had, it's hard to blame either of the players that he's had, like, balls that it's possible he could have gotten to, but he hasn't had exactly a banner defensive series.
No, I mean, the one the other day where he just didn't get in front of it and kind of try to backhand it, that didn't go well. And yeah, I think it's fair to say, like, either one of those not being made is, like, not a dire situation, but a play that, you know, if you do the math on those, he probably makes at least one of the two most of the time. And he didn't make either one of them in this instance, which is, of course, helpful for the Braves. And that gives the Braves the lead. So within six batters, basically, four, five, six batters, yeah, they go from down two to up one. Here's an interesting one. Ron Washington, who we made fun of on Sunday night for never having a stop sign, throws up a stop sign for Adam Duvall. And I don't...
Surprising.
It was surprising. I think with a different third base coach, it wouldn't have been so surprising. But it still was a little bit weird, in part because it was the pitcher spot up next. And yes, there's one out. You don't want to make a second out at home. I totally get all that, and you're winning. But Wash never holds anyone. And I think charitably, what you would probably say, and I haven't seen this, if anybody said it after the game, my apologies if that has already come out. But I think Wash maybe held him because he thought they were going to pinch hit for Morton with Adrianza, who was already ready to pinch hit and was kind of like clearly going to come in if the game was tied, it felt like. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but either way, it was not, I think he would have scored because Duvall can really run. And yeah, it was just a very strange time. I'm not even sure however else to say. It wasn't like it was a complete disaster decision, but I think he would have scored. Maybe you disagree with me, and I think it was just a very off-brand for Ron Washington.
Well, I mean, it was definitely off-brand for Ron Washington. I mean, him throwing up a stop sign was jarring. He just doesn't do that. But I don't think it was like a disastrous decision. I understand it in the context of the series, because now the Braves have a lead, and getting some innings out of Charlie Morton with a bullpen game coming up, I understand the desire to at least want to preserve your bullpen somewhat. Especially since it looks like that they're going to be able to get Buehler out of the game early, give you some sort of advantage there. I understand the impulse. I do. And I don't necessarily blame them for that. But at the same time, it definitely, like, didn't feel great to have, you know, a ton of base runners and have Charlie Morton at the plate. You know, but they still got another run out of it. So it wasn't, again, like total disaster fuel or anything like that. But I understand the impulse. It could have gone either way for me.
Yeah. You know, Morton hits for himself. I didn't like it in the moment, I'll be honest. It wasn't one where I was throwing a fit about it. But if it's, you know, in the moment, I was thinking, you know, I would have hit for him here. And part of that was because Morton just wasn't very good. Now, I think it does look better in retrospect because he did get six more outs. And, you know, those were six big outs. And he was much better after that. Still, though, the counterpoint is that you could have broken it open. And you don't know what's going to happen there. A lot of people pointed out that the Braves don't really have a great pinch hit option, and I certainly agree with that. We've kind of poked fun and lamented the lack of bench pop right now that they have. So you hit Adrianza there, there's certainly no guarantees that he's going to do anything for you. And they did it. They did tack one on because Eddie Rosario draws a base loaded walk. So, you know, no complaints about being up 4-2 at the end of that inning. The aggressive move would have been to take Morton out in that spot, but I'm not in a place to just kind of, you know, criticize Snicker. And, I think we both tweeted this during the game, and I still stand by it despite the loss. I think Snicker has done a pretty solid job in the series. Like, obviously, we talk about all of the things that he could or couldn't do on this podcast all the time, and there are some moves that I haven't loved, but I think he's done a better job than Dave Roberts, and I think he's been fine overall, so we're not trying to pile on. I just thought that that was one where it was close. I would have leaned to hitting for Morton, but I also get both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I think Snit has certainly outmanaged Dave Roberts. I think Roberts has made some pretty questionable decisions throughout the course of the series. And what cost the Braves in this game wasn't that decision, or and wasn't any specific decision. You know, at the end of the day, what cost them that is some, like, the Dodgers making plays when they needed to, and particularly that Bellinger home run, which still I keep watching, and I'm just like, how did he even hit it out?
Yeah, and also, like, I mean, we'll get into it, of course, but it's not a situation where you lost this game with Chris Martin or Jacob Webb on the mound. Like, you lost the lead with one of the guys that you've trusted all season long that, yeah, you could have maybe gone to Will Smith or whatever you want to say there, but, like, going down with Luke Jackson, who's been one of your three best relievers this season, you're not going to get a whole lot of managerial flack for that. So we'll come back to it, of course, but I'm kind of with you. I mean, losing this game was not on the manager by any means, and, you know, we're not always the kindest on the decisions, but certainly a game where I'm not blaming the manager for what transpired. One more thing before we get to a break and go to the second half of this contest. We have to try to have a little bit of fun on the show tonight, and we have to bring up your proclamation from the last podcast about Walker Buehler. So if anybody missed this, I think your phone was blowing up for like 10 minutes tonight, but Walker Buehler was chased from this game during the fourth inning, and you made quite a proclamation on the last show, which I will make you share again what you said, and it's still very much in play, so no one's saying it's not. But what did you say on the last podcast that got a lot of attention tonight?
Yeah, I stopped counting at around 20 tweets and or DMs about it. But on the last podcast, I said that if Walker Buehler, regardless of the result of the game, if he throws less than 5 innings tonight, that the Braves are going to win the series. I stand by that. The Dodgers threw 9 relievers in this game after throwing 8 and 7 in the previous two games. I don't think their bullpen holds up over that. I think that they needed to be able to save some guys. Now, like a couple guys like Vezia, for example, he only faced one hitter. But, you know, all that warming up and just having constantly just going to that bullpen, I understand that they have a pretty good bullpen, but they're really having to dip into it just to be able to get through the starts. And these are starts made by Max Scherzer and Walker Buehler. These are the guys that were supposed to be preserving their bullpen and going deep into games and, like, really kind of keeping other opposing offenses in check, and they haven't been able to do that. So, you know, the result tonight obviously was bad, and there's no sugarcoating that, but I really do think now that, like, the Braves have 2 games in hand, they've obviously losing tonight sunk, but I think the Dodgers find themselves in a bit of a tough situation the rest of this series, particularly with how much they've had to use that bullpen, and I think the Braves are favored the rest of the way. I do. I will not back off from that whatsoever.
I'm not going to make you. We'll talk about that at the very end of the podcast, but I just wanted to make fun of that because it was a funny moment in the moment because of how many people
tweeting. There's so many people.
Yes.
Literally, as soon as that pitching change was made, I mean, like, it was just like a constant, my phone's constantly buzzing. I've got like 30 notifications, you know, like, you know, they're like, he's out in the fourth, you know, and it was, you know, it's like, so Braves go in the World Series, Eric, confirmed. You know, I was a lot of that. I got a kick out of that, to be sure.
Yeah, it was a funny moment, and I wish the that ended better, but that was a one to remember in some respects. All right, before we go to a break, the fifth inning also helped the Braves. They actually took the 5-2 lead on a Adam Duvall RBI single following Ozzie Albies stealing second. Rau draws a walk, and Jock gets Ozzie over, and they kind of score in a small ball fashion in the fifth. Morton somehow gets through the fifth. Shouts to him for getting those 6 extra outs, and when he leaves the game, it's 5-2, and you're in perfectly fine shape. From there, not a whole lot to, like, pick apart until the eighth. The one thing that came up later on, more so than in the moment, which is why I'm trying not to be a revisionist history kind of guy here. What did you make of them going to Minter in the sixth? Because that was a question I got a lot after the game, like maybe why he came in against the bottom of the order. I didn't really mind it personally because of the formula they've kind of been following for a while now, but clearly it would have been nice to have him available later on.
I mean, sure, right? But, like, you know, where he's pitching, there's like several lefties involved, and I had no problems with that decision. I think that at the end of the day, you're like, you're bringing in Minter, you're bringing in Matzik, you're bringing in Luke Jackson, and you're bringing in Will Smith. I think those are just the guys that they trust the most right now in terms of getting those final outs. Jesse Chavez has been warming up basically the entire game now, so I suppose that was another option. But I don't have any issues, particularly with like the lefties he was going up against in that particular situation. It seemed like a pretty good spot to use him. Obviously, you know, people can make assumptions about like who should be used in what specific high leverage situations, but I at the end of the day, I just didn't have any. It seems like that people will have problems with it, like after the fact. They would like, I would have used him in this spot. And you know, then, and that the, whatever reliever they would choose to have, like, you know, Jesse Chavez or Jacob Webb or whoever, would have just gotten these outs just as easily in that spot. And I don't think that's necessarily the case, particularly against a lineup as good as, you know, the Dodgers. And, you know, once we get, you know, back from the break and all that, we can kind of talk a little bit about kind of why the bullpen decisions ultimately, I didn't think actually mattered all that much as opposed to kind of just what plays were made. But at the end of the day, like, I don't have any problems with that decision.
Yeah, I just want to at least ask you because it came up in the mentions later on in the evening, and that's sort of a bit of a foreshadowing to get into the end of this game. But first, a word from our sponsors on the show today.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Okay, Eric, let us continue. The seventh inning was fairly quiet. As you referenced in our document, former Braves farmhand Evan Phillips came into the game for the Dodgers.
He did.
I mean, you covered it at one point, so.
He throws when he was in the minors, threw really hard, didn't really know where it was going, and he looked really good for the Dodgers. So, but I have a tough time being. It's one of those things where if I, you know, like if there's a former Braves minor leaguer that's on the mound or at the plate, I like, it's hard for me not to root for him a little bit because, you know, it's so hard to get to the major leagues. And in Evan's case, he was like dealt to the Orioles of all places in the Gaussman deal. And then he's bounced around to a couple other teams because again, in like teams like the Rays and the Dodgers, you know, really analytically oriented teams because the stuff is so good that if you can figure it out, like he could be a really useful bullpen piece. And, you know, he's landed with the Dodgers and, you know, it's hard to argue with the results right now because the Braves couldn't do much of anything against him.
Yeah. Well, at least when I mentioned that because you brought it up here, and shouts to the Brave minor league system. Your favorite sons, all of them.
All of them.
Okay, so here we are at the fireworks. you bring in Luke Jackson. That's the move they always make in that spot. You know, Matzik had been great in the seventh. He's been really good for a while now. But given who he faced, I mean, Matzik came in to face Betts, Seager, and Trey Turner. Like, that's what you want. I mean, I trust Matzik more than Jackson, but that's what you, I mean, that's kind of what
he annihilated him.
Yeah. And then, and that's the thing. Like, you know, I'm not a big fan of the being kind of a, you know, obligated or whatever your process to kind of just use the same guys in every inning. But in that spot, like, they didn't necessarily do that. They used Matzik, who I think has been their best reliever for a little bit now, against the top of the Dodgers order in the seventh. So that worked out well. And then you bring in Jackson, who they trust. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I do want to make one note about the Matzik decision. It's using a lefty against that specific trio that we've seen the Braves do in this series already. And it kind of speaks to kind of what I had mentioned earlier, is that, you know, Mookie is not as good against lefties. And you obviously don't want to get beat by Seager, because his sole mission in life seems to be to beat the Braves in the playoffs and then take your chances with Trey. And it seems like I think they figured something out with Trey specifically, is that if you're pitching from the left side, that if you're throwing breaking balls at his back foot, like, he will swing at them and look bad doing it. And that's exactly how Matzik got him out. And that's how Minter handled him. It seems like they might have figured something out with that particular part of the lineup, as to how they want to handle it. Either use Matzik or use Minter, you know, and just, you know, just they. I think they have a plan for how to deal with that particular part of the lineup. So I was happy to see how they executed it.
Yeah, that worked out just fine. And, you know, you go to Luke Jackson. I know there was a argument happening in my mentions tonight. It wasn't really involving me, about whether Luke had been good this year. Which this is maybe
sure.
Yeah. So long story short, it was about his peripherals versus ZRA and all this stuff. Obviously his peripherals are not quite what ZRA is. No one's going to argue that, but I think it is fair to say that Luke Jackson's pitched well this year. He has a sub-2 ERA this season. Yes, his peripherals are more in like the mid threes, high threes, but that's still fairly good. Anyway, he comes in, and there's a little bit of their issues right away. It was a couple of singles from Smith and Pollock, and then the fateful home run by Bellinger on a 1-2 pitch. And we talked about it earlier, but it's worth emphasizing yet again. It was not a strike. It wasn't fairly close to being a strike. It takes a pretty special talent to hit that ball over the wall. And Bellinger's been terrible this season, but he is a former like MVP level player. So you can't just kind of fake that. And, you know, this is my own observation, and I'm not a pitching expert, but I want to know what you think. I think his slider was pretty bad. You know, he's known for his slider, obviously, and that's his best pitch. He hung a few in this game. And I think maybe that was why they went fastball 1-2. Even the out that he got before the Bellinger home run was a pretty hanging slider that he just got away with. I don't know. There was a big discussion about whether they should have thrown a fastball 1-2 and locations and all this stuff. And at the end of the day, it's kind of like, where I am is that you kind of have to tip your hat, just because it wasn't a strike and Luke had just blown a fastball by him the previous pitch, or maybe two pitches before that. So, you know, it sucks, but sometimes there's just like not anybody to just blame. Like, sometimes it's not like a situation or a mistake that just happened, and sometimes the guy's just better than you. And that is kind of what I think happened here with Bellinger.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the two pitches, those two fastballs that were high, one was like clips the top of the zone. That was a much scarier pitch.
And he blew it by him. I mean, yeah, he was late on it.
And this next one's like 4 or 5 inches up out of the zone. I mean, I don't know how many players are even capable of hitting that pitch out in the major leagues right now. And I certainly wouldn't think Bellinger, of all the guys who's like seems vulnerable to those high pitches. He likes to swing at them and not do much with them. So that's a pitch to make. And I agree with you on the slider. It wasn't diving out of the zone or in a way that was useful. It wasn't just the out that he got. There was a couple sliders where I'm like, please don't throw that there again. Because like it was like, you know, middle or like, you know,
he didn't have it today.
The slider was not sliding, and when it doesn't do that, that's a scary pitch to throw, because particularly, you know, lefties get a long look at it. And I'm certainly feel a lot better about Bellinger having to hit that pitch out, because I want him swinging at that pitch 100 times out of 100. I want him to swing at that pitch. But if you hang a slider to him and he hits it out, that feels significantly worse to me. Now, both the results are essentially the same, but in terms, like, you have to think about the process here a little bit. And, you know, at the end of the day, if his slider's not working and you get him to swing at a fastball out of the zone and he ends up doing that with it, then that's what happens, you know. At the end of the day, that's the problem with this Dodgers team, is that you can do everything that you want to do. You can execute everything the way you want to, and they can still beat you because all these guys are, you know, maybe Bellinger hasn't been good, but it's not like the guy isn't talented. And there's a ton of talent and dangerous hitters in this lineup. And that's what happened in this game. It's just like, eventually they just figured things out and got the job done.
Yeah. And okay, here's where we get into the only thing that I would say, you know, I'm sure it's just frustration from Braves fans, and it's Twitter and people are angry, and I totally get it. A couple of bullpen decision things now that we talked about that with Jackson. First of all, on the Bellinger home run, the only thing the Braves could have even thought about doing there was going to Will Smith. Jackson had already pitched three batters, so he could have come out of the game, and with Bellinger there. But then you're asking Will Smith to get five outs, probably. And has he done that all year? I don't think he has, or even tried to do it all year. I don't even know if he's available to throw two innings or multiple innings. That's a question that maybe Sticker gets asked. But, I mean, on the Bellinger thing, that's the only thing I can think of that you could have done differently, is maybe put in Smith there, lefty on lefty against Bellinger. But don't they just hit for Bellinger anyway? I mean, probably.
I mean, they could hit for Bellinger. It's worth noting that I'm terrified of the idea of Will Smith being locked in against, like, the Dodgers in general. So I'm not sure how much the result even could have been the same. Because if you're talking about leaving a slider fat, or, you know, leaving a fastball fat, you know, the one guy who seems like a prime candidate to do that is Will Smith. So
it really just comes down to, like, is he even available to try to get five outs? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't really mind just sticking with Jackson there. Bellinger, I know he's a big name and a former, like, you know, top tier player, but he's been bad this season. And they trust Luke, and again, wasn't even a bad pitch. So I didn't have a problem with that, but people were asking, like, you know, what could they have done? And the only thing they could have done there, at least on that decision, was maybe go to Smith. Like, there's no way they're going to anybody else in that spot. It's Jackson or Smith, and even then, it's probably going
to
be Jackson.
Bringing in Jesse Chavez to go against Cody Bellinger does not seem like the play to me.
Well, speaking of Chavez, so that was the other decision people were asking about and kind of wondering what we thought about. So, you know, they bring in Chavez after Luke gives up another single to Taylor after the home run. It was time to get Luke at that point. I think he was not his best, clearly. They bring in Chavez, and my only point was, and, you know, it was kind of during the meltdown, the continued meltdown. My only point was, if you don't want to go to Chavez there, who do you want to go to? And there wasn't really a great answer that was given back to me, because look, I mean, we talked about this even when they're winning games early in the series, they don't have a lot of depth that you trust. Sticker seems to trust four guys. He trusts Smith and Jackson and Matzik and Minter. And that's basically it. I mean, they brought in Martin in, earlier, what was it, in the eighth inning on Sunday? But, you know, the difference between Chavez and Martin or Webb is not big enough for me to really care. So, I mean, somebody mentioned Enoa, like, no thank you.
And more importantly, Chavez, as much as he's had to warm up over the course of the game, I'm not sure if they'd even want to throw him tomorrow.
Because maybe
not. When you warm him up that much over the course of a game, you mean, like, he'd just been, like, throwing, like, off and on throughout the course of the game, that's a big part of it.
It probably is. Yeah, I mean, Sticker's definitely someone who's cognizant of that stuff, and this is when the Minter thing came up, because yes, in a perfect world, would you rather had Chavez face the bottom of the order in the sixth, or have Minter available on this spot? Yes, but in that same world, you know, it would have looked silly to not pitch Minter at all in this game, which would have happened if Jackson was just his normal self. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a, you can't have it perfectly. And I'm guilty too of, you know, trying to overanalyze stuff, but
yeah. In hindsight, when things go wrong, it would have been better if things had gone right.
Well, right. Exactly. I mean, you know what I mean though? Like, if they use Chavez in the sixth, he pitches well, and then they just do their standard progression from there, and you go to Madsick, Jackson and Smith, I might bring up after the game why they didn't use AJ Minter tonight. You know what I mean? Like, that might happen. So at the end of the day, Chavez was not good in this game. You know, I will certainly admit that having Jesse Chavez in the biggest game of your season facing Mookie Betts, Corey Seager, Trey Turner, and Will Smith is not what I want if I'm a Braves fan. That goes without saying. But
correct.
But again, you have to give me an alternative. And you may prefer Chris Martin. You may prefer Jacob Webb. That's fine. But the gap between those guys is just not very big. So unless you wanted to go to Will Smith there because you just think that Will Smith is your guy and you go to him, that's I would at least listen to that because Will Smith is, you know, as much as he's been getting piled on this season, he is one of their high leverage guys. That would have been the only thing that I could have been like, okay, that's he's definitely better than Chavez is Will Smith. And you're bringing Will Smith to get, again, to get four or five outs. And I don't know if he's equipped for that. So long story short, you can quibble with it if you want to. And I'm fine quibbling with stuff. But I just don't know who else you put in. I mean, do you have a preference? Is somebody that screaming for you to put in ahead of Chavez? Is it Martin because he's just been there before? I don't know.
No one that I have a strong preference for, right? And again, like in terms of hindsight, like the idea in that inning is you only have to throw Luke Jackson, right?
Well, that's the plan. That's the whole plan.
So I mean, like if folks are getting like genuinely that upset about bullpen decisions. When the guy that, like, Luke just was the guy, and no one had any issues with Luke Jackson coming into that game whatsoever. He, like, as good as he's been in big spots, particularly in the second half for this Braves team, and, like, he's the guy that you want to get through that inning and then get to Will Smith. But when things go sideways, all of a sudden everyone has these strong opinions about how they would have handled things, what pitches that should have been thrown and things like that. When at the end of the day, he just got beat by some really good hitters. And then the Braves found themselves with somewhat lacking options down the line because they had used good options in important leverage situations. They preserved that 3-run lead through the 7th inning because they were using guys like Matzik and Minter to preserve it. If you have, you know, guys like Jesse Chavez coming in instead in the 6th inning, you have no guarantee whatsoever that the Dodgers don't just go off on him in the 6th inning. None. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's 37, 38-year-old Jesse Chavez or Jacob Webb or, you know, a Chris Martin. All those guys are not necessarily super reliable arms. But once things go sideways and you start running out of guys, they don't have like a bullpen that's seven guys deep of guys throwing like with a 2 ERA. They just don't have that. And I don't think that very many teams at all have that. So when you kind of get down to the nitty gritty of it, when things go sideways, decisions quote unquote look worse in hindsight. But it's just because one of your really good guys got beat tonight, and that stinks.
Yep. Occasionally, it's just that simple that one of the guys you trust, and that this is the downside, if you want to say that, to being as formulaic as the Braves have been, because it's really been almost weirdly formulaic in this playoff run because of how well it's worked. They could just kind of end the game at the end of the 6th inning or in the middle of the 6th inning and just hand the ball to the Matzik, Jackson, Smith trio, and the bullpen's been so good. I mean, we talked about it on Sunday's show. Yep. The bullpen numbers before tonight were just unbelievably good. They were probably due for something of a blow up. Maybe not this bad, but you know, their ERA for the bullpen was like sub-1 coming into tonight, something like that in the playoffs. I mean, Enoa, yeah, and the one guy who blew up was Enoa. Like,
yeah, and then you have two walk-off wins too. I mean,
they've been running hot. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Tonight was unlucky in a lot of ways, but they've been running hot before this. They have been so.
Yep. Absolutely.
It's just one of those things. All right, moving on from there, we kind of dissected that as much as we possibly can, but, you know, Chavez just misses against Betts, and Betts is probably going to the Hall of Fame one day and hits a 107-mile-an-hour liner that's just smoked in the gap, and they take the lead. You know, credit to Chavez for not getting out of hand there. You know, they intentionally walk Seager and then gets beat on infield single to Trey Turner, but he gets Will Smith to end the inning and give him a chance. But Kenley Jansen was Kenley Jansen in the 9th. A weird at bat by Austin Riley, who has been awesome, so no criticism, but he just kind of froze on like a pitch that wasn't even a great pitch from Kenley. That was a weird thing for him because he's been so locked in. It was just weird to see not have a good at bat.
Yeah, and the at bat itself before that was good.
Yeah, it was fine.
He was like fouling off pitches. It was like a 7-pitch at bat. He seemed like I don't know what he was looking for. Maybe he was just shell shocked or just like, I don't know what he was looking. Maybe he thought that there was a pitch in the dirt coming and, you know, Kenley just got him, but. Like, that was a pitch that was right in Austin's wheelhouse, and he just watched it go into the mitt. So that was definitely a weird one. But other than that, I mean, like, and, you know, Jock and Duvall, Kenley just ate
the game. He struck out the side. Yeah, I mean, he's really good when he's good, and he was good in this game. And at that point, you're the underdog, clearly, after giving up the lead and all that. But we can leave it there in terms of the nuts and bolts. But brutal. Again, six outs to go, three-run lead. You're just supposed to win a large majority of the time, and they didn't win this one. But one side of my brain wants to dwell in the Atlanta sports zone because I've seen this movie many times. And the word Leritz was like trending on my timeline this evening. The Leritz references were flying. I get that because of the similar situation in a lot of ways.
There are certainly some similarities.
There are some similarities there. If you're too young to know about Jim Leritz, Google it. But the 96 World Series is what we're talking about there. With the Braves, we're leading 2-0 in that series. Anyway, game four looms on Wednesday. It's a turnaround. There's no off day in between. We are just go, go, go. After the game, Snicker confirmed what was expected the entire time, which is that it's going to be a bullpen game of some sort for the Braves in game four. Now, what that actually means is up for debate. And he was not going to give details, nor should he give details to the public right now. But essentially, they don't have a four-starter right now that anybody trusts. So you can get through the series with this being the only game it's a bullpen game because you can come back with Max Fried on full rest in game five. But game four is going to be some combination of your relievers. You have two longer guys in Waskar Ynoa and Drew Smyly. Ynoa has been pretty darn bad the last like month or so. His last eight starts in regular season had a near six ERA. He was pretty bad in his one appearance against the Brewers. Smyly hasn't pitched in 2.5 weeks. He was warming up tonight, but didn't come into the game, obviously. He was pretty good out of the pen in September, but, you know, clearly Smyly, as much as I've kind of defended him, is not this great option. So they don't have a great multi-inning option. They might use both these guys. They might use Chavez. I mean, in the regular season, as you remember, Eric, in September, they used an opener, I think, 3 or 4 times, and it was Chavez that was the guy that they were using in that role. I don't really think it matters too much. You know, Minter famously opened last year in the playoffs and pitched great in that role. So they have some options.
Yeah, he went like three innings.
Yeah, he went three innings and was great. Yeah. They have some options for sure, but it goes without saying, but everybody who can pitch will pitch. I don't know if that means everybody's available because, you know, they had a day off yesterday, but, you know, a lot of guys pitched tonight. We'll see who's available and who's not. But you figure you got 27 outs to get and you got a bunch of pitchers to get them. And the only guys who you would think would be like totally unavailable would be Fried and Morton.
Because Fried goes
the next day and Morton today. I mean, Anderson might have a throw day. Like maybe he's available like on a one inning throw day kind of thing that we've seen. I don't know if they're going to actually do that. I doubt it, to be honest. But everybody else should be available, you'd imagine.
Yeah, I don't think there's any chance that Morton would throw in the game.
No, Morton and Fried are not going to pitch. I mean, unless something just incredibly crazy happens, they're not pitching.
I mean, the Braves are somewhat fortunate in that. I mean, while I don't have the highest level of confidence in Ynoa or Smyly, those are two guys that can throw multiple innings. And in theory, if they're pitching reasonably well, they will do so. You know, the Chavez things. The open with Chavez is to kind of set up Smyly, right? Because if you open with Chavez, then it feels like that they will put together that like that top of the lineup that will be good against the righty. And that way you can, you know, maybe set up having Smyly being set up for success later on down in the lineup. But, you know, my gut tells me that one of Ynoa or Smyly is going to get the start. And I'm not going to be shocked if it's Ynoa, even though you're absolutely right that he hasn't looked nearly as good, particularly since coming back from the injured list. You know, and I've had my reservations about Ynoa as a starter to begin with, but this isn't like a typical starting situation at all. And after that, you know, Jacob Webb didn't pitch tonight. Chris Martin didn't pitch tonight. Will Smith didn't pitch tonight. And you have some guys that you can probably run out there. You at some point, you can't keep running Matzik out there. I think, giving him a day at some point would be good. But he's been so good that I think they're going to lean on him as much as possible. I think they'll stay away from Luke because he had a bad night tonight. And maybe giving him a day would be good. But beyond that, I mean, it's going to be all hands on deck. And honestly, it could be the same for the Dodgers, too, because they've thrown a bunch of guys, including Urias, who threw in game two. And I still maintain that was a mistake because now he's got to make his third appearance in 6 days. and you know the Braves didn't seem particularly fooled by him in that relief appearance. I don't know if that necessarily maybe the Dodgers end up going kind of with that. What Roberts mentioned was that maybe he throws in Game 5 and not Game 4. But then, like, who's throwing in Game 4? Game 4 is going to be a really weird game, I think, in terms of how it's managed and how it's pitched on both sides. And, you know, obviously it's going to be a pretty important game, and we'll see which offense can kind of capitalize on the decisions made.
Yeah, I'm trying to look for some indications in, for the postgame of what the Dodgers are going to do. It'll either be Urias or it will be a bullpen game, and I don't really know the answer to that. As because of what you said, you know, it might be the fifth game, whatever, however they handle that. But, you know, it goes without saying, but you treat it like a like elimination game. You treat this game like you need to win it for your season. And we'll see what that looks like. But you need to be aggressive. Everybody pitches that can pitch. We might have to see guys who haven't thrown to this point. Like, Drew Smiley hasn't pitched in a long time. He probably pitches maybe tomorrow at some point. We'll see. I don't really know what to make of it. He's not going to tell anybody ahead of time, most likely. I mean, obviously, they have to announce a starter at some point, but it'll be maybe a one-inning guy to start things. So we'll see. I think the Braves will be underdog in the betting market in Game 4 because it's in Los Angeles. And even tonight, when the Braves had a relatively neutral pitching matchup, the Dodgers were pretty heavily favored in the market. Soler, by the way, is still out. That kind of came out today. Not came out today, but there's pretty much no chance he plays while they're in L.A. They're hoping maybe he plays in Atlanta if the series returns. But, you know, we'll see. This is kind of funny, and we'll end the podcast here, because I know you mentioned earlier you think the Braves are the favorite in the series. I totally understand that. Fangraphs agrees with you. Fangraphs gives the Braves a 55.6% chance to win the series at this moment in time. I thought it was funny, though, that our friends at 538 currently make the series 50-50.
Cowards.
Cowardice from the model of 538. I don't know. I'm of two minds. If I turn off my broken Atlanta sports brain, that or heart probably is more like it. If I turn that off and look at this thing analytically, I think I would probably be with you and give the Braves a slight advantage in the series. The other side of my brain that has just seen too much is just like expecting the worst at this moment because of how things flip tonight. Like, I just saw a stat from our own Stephen Tolbert where, you know, the Braves had one extra base hit tonight, and it was the only one that they got credit on extra base hit tonight. Yeah. was the Gavin Lux play that wasn't even really a hit. It was more of an error.
So yeah, like that's not a recipe for success for the Braves.
No, I mean, this is a team that's, we talked about a lot, but this is a team that's based heavily on power and it has been the entire time. Okay, it looks like the Dodgers just named Julio Urías as their starter for Game 4. So, forget what I just said about that. He's going to pitch in game four, per multiple
completely
sources.
Completely ignore that. Live updates.
This is why I keep looking during the show, just to make sure nothing comes out. So there you go. Urías is going to be the guy for the Dodgers. Clearly, if we're being objective, advantage Dodgers pitching-wise tomorrow. Urías is good. And he's an actual starter, and the Braves are going to be throwing a bullpen game. So, on paper, this is not ideal for Atlanta. Still, though, we've seen them put some stuff together, and you know the offense may be just due for a little bit of a breakout. And Urías is not unhittable by any means; like he can be gotten, as we've seen. So, I don't know. You've kind of staged your case. Do you think it's trending more like towards Braves in seven at this point, or how confident are you at this moment versus where we were? You know. 3 hours ago,
I'll say Braves in seven. I think that's completely fair. I mean, look, before this series started, in a vacuum, not looking at kind of what's happened and how things have unfolded, I said the Dodgers in six, and it's because I really respect this lineup. I think that they're legitimately scary. Now, I think how the things have gone down there's been a lot that's gone the Braves' way. You know, getting two walk-off wins, including beating Scherzer, and the Dodgers have had to just use the crap out of their bullpen and their pitching staff. I think that the Braves could very easily win tomorrow, just because I think that they've played against Urias pretty well this year anyway, in the bullpen, in the playoffs last year, not so much, but I think that, you know, this year particularly, you know, he certainly looks shaken when he was brought in the bullpen in game two, and you know the Braves ended up, you know, getting right back into that game right off of him. I think that this lineup is pretty good against lefties in particular, despite some of the some platoon issues with kind of the guys they've been relying on so far. I would not be shocked if the Braves won tomorrow. You know, it's always kind of hard to project what's going to be happening with a bullpen game situation. But if managed correctly and, you know, everyone executes the way they're supposed to, I think that the Braves could squeak this one out, especially if the offense shows up and they're actually showing some power in Dodger Stadium. I still maintain that this Dodgers team is scary, and they won 106 games for a reason, but I think that things line up well enough for the Braves that I still think that they win this game, and I'll say Braves in seven right now.
Yeah, totally reasonable. Like I said, my brain tells me the same. Clearly, it would have been, you know, if the Braves win tonight, I mean, I think it's not even worth saying almost, but if they win tonight, they are, you know, 95% favorites.
And oh yeah, I'm very confident in their ability to win one of the next four.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah, I mean,
this one hurts.
Clearly, sure. I think everybody knows that, but just even percentage wise, like it's probably a 40-point gap, win or lose tonight, and that's a big swing. But yeah, I think they're okay. You know, if you lose game four, I will say that they are no longer the favorite in the series. That's not breaking news, but you know, going back to the beginning of this thing, the Dodgers were the favorite in my mind. Not that the Braves could win by any means, but given the momentum swing, I don't care how much you believe in that, but if it's 2-2 after the way things started and the way that tonight was going, I will pick the Dodgers probably at that point. So that kind of tells you how important game four is. That's not breaking news, but we'll see if the Braves can bounce back. This is a resilient bunch. You know, the Team of Destiny stuff has been real. Snicker was pretty matter of fact tonight on the podium about how they weren't going to let this kind of, you know, beat them twice, essentially, was the way that, I'm not sure he said that exact thing, but that was kind of the tenor of the comments. So we'll see how they react to it. But a brutal one for everybody involved on this night. I wish we were celebrating a Game 3 win and looking ahead a little bit with more confidence, but still in a 5 position. I mean, I'll leave you with this, Eric. If I told you 3 or 4 days ago the Braves have a 2-1 lead in the series, you kind of have to take that, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And I probably would have put it more like it was more likely the Dodgers were going to be up two games to one, just because of, like, you know, the quality of the starting pitchers they have combined with, again, the respect that I have for that lineup. I think that ultimately, you know, you have to be pretty happy if you're a Braves fan as to where they are currently. I know that a lot of people are in their feelings right now in terms of, like, well, this is just like last year, et cetera, et cetera. And I completely understand that because this is a very, very, very winnable game and, you know, a confluence of disasters, you know, resulted in that not happening. But ultimately, you know, considering where the Braves, I've been saying this, you know, since the Braves started the playoffs, is that they're playing with house money and that they're in a position where they, you know, weren't even supposed to be, and then they beat a Brewers team that I think we all thought they were better than, and they did, and now they're in a Dodgers series, which I didn't even pick them to win, and they're not being completely outclassed by the Dodgers. The Dodgers had to sneak one out here, and then the Braves really played well to come back and win two games earlier in the series. They're right in this thing. I think it's going to be really, really close. It's going to be a bunch of really close games, and, you know, ultimately, I still think the Braves are favored. I kind of stated my reasoning as to why that is, but ultimately, you know, these are two really, really good teams, and a lot of things can happen, and ultimately, this comes down to execution.
Agreed, and we'll get after this thing on Wednesday evening. I think I'll be joined by Scott Coleman for a very, very late night episode and give you a little bit of time to potentially sleep another hour tomorrow night, Eric. But I appreciate your efforts.
Thanks, buddy.
Two of the last three nights. You know, we circled the early game to hopefully not, you know, make Scott lose his mind on that one. And you and I were dialed up for this one. I was all over the place tonight, but we're here, and I'm hoping we're talking again very soon on this feed in celebratory fashion. But for now, we will be back after game four to recap that and much, much more. And I want to say to you, thank you. And also to everybody listening to the podcast, I want to thank everybody for listening for sure. And also subscribing and rating and reviewing the podcast. It's been a huge response. We are very grateful. I know we poked fun earlier about the volume of responses to what you said on the podcast the other day. That was cool to see. It was so many. Again, thank you to everybody for listening. Eric, please plug anything you got going, because I know you've been busy and we'll be busy the rest of the series.
Yeah, I mean, it's all playoff baseball all the time right now, so I do want to just kind of echo Brad. Make sure that you're subscribing to the podcast. Tell your friends about the podcast and make sure they subscribe to them. We've gotten a lot of new listeners, a lot of downloads over the last few weeks with all this playoff coverage. And we do really, really appreciate all that support. I also want to give a little shout-out to Sean Coleman, who's been an amazing addition to the podcast staff.
Absolutely.
He's done a great job with the Daily Hammer. Holding down the fort when we don't have the flagship show going. Obviously, during the playoff run, you've certainly been hearing from Brad, Scott, and myself a lot more. But filling in the gaps and just being just kind of an addition to the kind of the coverage that we give. Sean's been awesome. And when we had to do the preview show and we had to kind of figure out folks that could actually participate with Brad traveling and Scott was unavailable. Sean was ready to jump in, and I thought he did a great job on that preview show. So just I just want to kind of give a special shout out to them, and also a shout out to Chris Willis and the staff over in Talking Chop. The written coverage over on the site's been fantastic over the course of the playoffs. So make sure that you're going to the site talkingchop.com, reading those articles, and letting those folks know how much you appreciate them, because they've been, especially our fearless leader Chris, he's constantly working tirelessly to provide a ton of coverage and keeping fans up to date, and he doesn't get enough love. So I want to make sure we give a little love to him.
He's all right. No, I'm kidding. I love Chris. We've been working together for a long time. Chris and I have been working together for almost a decade at this point, which is crazy, in different places, covering the Hawks first and now on Brave stuff. So shouts to Chris and Sean, everybody else you mentioned, and I guess Scott will be back soon.
Yeah, make sure you guys ask Chris why he doesn't follow the NBA anymore. That'll elicit some entertaining.
That was a side conversation in Slack today that we can revisit at some other time. But thank you, Eric, for joining the podcast. As always, as for everybody else, one more time, please subscribe, rate, review, and we'll see you after game.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.